Welcome everyone to the Jesus and Family Ministry Podcast. Our desire is to help build thriving families that produce great ministries. Settle in, grab a pad and pen, and we pray this is a blessing to you.
Well, welcome everybody to the episode. Thank you for joining us, and I'm very excited to have a returning guest today, Pastor Chad Douglas. And sir, it's great to have you on today.
Hey, my friend, it's great to be it's great to be here with you, talking to you, and appreciate the invite back. That means I must have said one or two words last time that might have made some sense.
Yes, sir. You all did a great job, you and your wife. Yeah,
that's
a phenomenal job.
Thank you.
And I'm excited to dive in about, you know, being a husband and being a father today. But before we get started, want to pray and just kind of go in from there. Father, we thank you for this day. God, we thank you for this time, this ability to spend, Lord, discussing a very important topic, Lord.
Oh, yes,
God. Hey, Lord, understanding being a father, being a husband, Lord. And I thank you, God, for this opportunity to gain wisdom and knowledge. I pray, oh God, that you would lead our conversation. I pray, God, that we would be effective in the way we communicate, Lord, and help us, I pray, oh God, to touch the hearts and minds of people, Lord, and let your spirit move, I pray. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Amen. Amen.
So for those who don't know you, just real quickly, who are you? What do you do? And what's your family like?
Sure. So I sometimes don't know if I'm coming or going. I do think I know who I am. I am Chad Douglas, pastor of New Life Tabernacle in Virginia Beach, and have had the privilege of being in ministry for over 22 years now in some type of leadership capacity within the local church. And I've had the privilege, you know, from a, you know, I guess technically from the expert background, have had the privilege of being on committees and that have governed things as running the gamut from youth to church culture to family. And so presently serve in the capacity of a presbyter for the Virginia District of the United Pentecostal Church. So have had all of that matters in the sense that it gives some validity to the opportunities I've had to help people and to learn and glean regarding relationships, the important factors that govern healthy relationships. And so that's helped as I'm talking here. All of those things are wonderful and great privileges, but none of them, in fact, they all pale in comparison, including, in my opinion, and in my feeling, even my privilege of pastoring the church that I've been pastoring for 16 years now. All of that pales in comparison to being a husband and a father, to husband to my beautiful wife, Kristen, and father to my beautiful daughter, Alana. The privilege of serving in that role, if you will, and having those relationships is... it is the light of my life, and all of these other things have helped to, I think, build and prepare and give me insight to make sure that both what I'm doing at home is right and what I'm doing at home can affect those other areas that I serve in. And so I think that gives a full picture. Been in church all my life, I think it gives a full picture as to my background. The only other thing I'd mention is I also had the privilege before full-time ministry of serving as a courtroom deputy to a federal judge for almost 5 years. So I saw the best and worst of humanity in a very real sense that also applies to the aspect of relationship, and learned at a young age some do's and don'ts, if you will, with severe consequences.
Wow. That's something I did not know. I didn't know you actually were in law enforcement. That's pretty cool.
Well, I wasn't. The courtroom deputy role in federal court is different than state court. Federal court, it's the suit and tie. It's more of a clerk of the court role.
Gotcha.
And you're assigned specifically to a federal judge, and so you're the one that opens, closes court, tracks evidence, liaisons with the attorney and administrative personnel in the court system, and you know, you're hands on with the probation department, the marshals, and the judge's office. So,
gotcha.
It's okay. It was an exciting job, and certainly probably
would I can imagine.
Yeah, I had the dream of going into practicing law, and it just wasn't the Lord's will. And but it did afford a few years as a young man, early 20s, to really just see some amazing aspects of very interesting and sometimes rewarding and sometimes very sad side of life.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. I know, like, for today, we were, you know, questions I sent and things we wanted to talk about as far as being a husband and father. Last time, y'all did a phenomenal job, you and your wife. And you guys, if you've not watched or listened to that episode, it's both on YouTube and the podcast channel. And it's titled The Art of Saying No. Really good conversation. Brought a whole lot of great tips out. But here lately, what I've been doing is I felt really to focus on, you know, just the father and husband aspect of things. Right. And for you, I know as a pastor, as a husband, as a father, you know, when you're sitting across from a young man who's about to be one of those things or both of those things, right? He's about to be a husband or a father and or what are some things that you're really trying to help him understand? What are some advice that you're really trying to share with him to help him navigate being in that role?
Sure. It's a great question. And I think just to speak generally for a moment, I think what you're doing is so, so vital in the sense that men, I think in these roles, father and husband, sometimes men want to do right. They just don't know what that is. And you know, sometimes experience is going to be the only teacher, but there's certainly things you can learn on the front end. And during the process of growing as a husband and father that you don't have to do these on your own. And it doesn't just come from, you know, success or failure experience. It can come from other people's success and failure experience. And so I think this is valuable. The bottom line is Christian husbands and fathers, we have to be willing to work on ourselves. And if you look, I saw something just recently over the last, I think, 60 years or so, the 60s, the 1960s in our country was the era of the sexual revolution, where free love and if it feels good, do it kind of thing. And then into the 70s was abortion was a prime issue. Do what you want and you can eliminate the consequence. The 80s was the no-fault divorce era. Families were literally just coming apart. And as you see the family breakdown over those kind of decades, you watch the family unit, the underpinning of society being degraded. Then you move into the 90s where technology and sin come together with especially online pornography. Just an all-out assault on the minds of men, especially. 2000s, early 2000s is the hookup culture. You got to go find yourself. 2010s is same-sex marriage and these kind of things take the forefront. 2020s, we're in a time of identity crisis, literally. All of these things, the point that I'm making is there's been a decades assault on the family, the identity, the roles, the distinctions of men and women. And so we have to take it seriously, which means things like this and opportunities like this are important. And answering this question is important. In terms of advice about what a man should be focusing on, if they're about to become a husband or a father, the first thing that I would mention that, and this is just from my perspective as a pastor and as a mentor, I often will talk about there's three P's that I'll use. First of all, is priorities. I'll challenge a man in the area of priorities that you have to set some things. To keep your family first is obvious. In a nutshell, what I often challenge a young man that's getting ready to be a husband or a father is your family. Remember always your family deserves the best of you, not the leftovers of you. And so keep your family first. Don't allow the success and or failures of just existing and growing in other areas rob you of that priority. And also, if it's a father that we're talking to that's already a husband, my challenge is often not only to go further in the priority, make sure you keep your marriage first. And I understand that, you know, in the beginning phases of infancy, there's a lot of changes to the family dynamic.
Yes, there is.
It's been 19 years almost since I experienced that in our home, but I can recall just enough that it is a total game changer. But all the more so, the greater the challenge, the greater the necessity of making sure that the husband does not need to be taking the lead. The father does not need to be taking the lead from the wife and the mother in terms of preserving the priority of that relationship. He needs to be leading. His wife needs to know that regardless of having this wonderful new addition to the family, she is still his priority. That's a basic need. One of the five basic needs of a wife is that the man be involved in the family, but also one of the five basic needs of a woman is that she receives affection, and there's different ways to communicate that, but she has to still have affection from that man. So if it's a husband becoming a father, it's even more so that you keep your marriage first. You do everything you can to prioritize that relationship because it is the underpinning of every successful step from there. If you're a married couple, let me say it this way, it will best serve that child. And that doesn't mean that if it's a single parent, that they can't be successful. Of course not. But if you're married, that relationship being right, is the thing that's going to best serve that child, and their relationships being right and their growth and et cetera. So the first thing that I would say there, the advice is priorities. And then the second would be to plan, because you won't keep your family first and also stay effective in other areas of your life by accident. You have to, you have to strategize that. You know, the bottom line is that you have to plan in the aspect of strategizing, which is the how you're going to keep your family a priority. And then the planning phase is the when you're going to. So planning your calendar, planning your life and partnering with your spouse to keep the family first. So priorities, planning, and then both of those are pillars of a successful relationship and a successful family. And they stand on the foundation of pleasing God. This is the foundation of both of those pillars. What they stand on is a godly husband should be, regardless of the different roles they start to play as a husband, a man playing the role or taking on the role, responsibility of a husband and fatherhood, you just got to really be intentional to please God. And I don't just mean in relationship as far as, well, you know, you ought to pray and you ought to read your Bible. Obviously, those are components of it.
Yeah.
But I mean, keeping at the center of I want to please God. That's kind of a whole other thing. It's a pursuit, if you will, of holiness, which is an admonition of the New Testament to seek peace with all men and holiness. We need to be men that are still seeking for pleasing God because of course, relational elements of prayer and fasting, all those things kind of birth from that desire. We need to be intentional about keeping that passion of wanting to please God because they specifically will matter in the role of leader as a husband and a father. If you're trying your best to pursue God and to please him and not be, you know, from a legalistic or religiosity perspective, just, I want to please God. Your family is going to know that. Your wife's going to see that. Your children are going to see that. And it naturally births in them that same foundation that everything else can be built upon, which is, I just want to please God.
Yeah.
So those are the things as a pastor that I'm communicating to brand new husbands and fathers.
That's so good. To prioritize, make sure that you're planning, and then, you know, pleasing God. I know planning that part for some people can be like, it'd be very difficult because it can feel like you have competing top priorities.
Sure.
Right. So, you know, you have your family and also your ministry. And I know we talked a little bit about this or a lot about this in the last episode, but
we did.
You know, just kind of maybe to kind of help someone maybe find that place of focus. You know, when you're looking at planning and you're looking at what your priorities are, you know, you talked about your family being your top priority.
Right.
How do you ensure that you're giving the right amount of time, quality time, to the priorities that matter, right? So if you're in ministry, you got a family, you've got ministry. Maybe you're also working a job, so you've got to make sure you're planning for that as well. How do you kind of balance all of that out to make sure that you're doing it all right?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think the first thing that in this discussion, in terms of planning, making sure that they're all there, I think the first thing is to take a little bit of the technicality off of it and just be honest with ourselves. We will know when something's out of balance. You almost have to be real dense, pardon the frankness, to not realize, okay, I've got something out of balance. Either I'm being so neglectful to my positional requirements, whether it's ministry or whatever, it's going to be glaringly obvious. And because there are seasons of life where you're going to have to give your time to different things. And so it's one of those deals where the man needs to be really good at kind of keeping his finger on the pulse of the family relationship and keeping that as the first priority. And so, for instance, to help plan on the technical side of it, if you will, you need to be good with a calendar. You need to discipline yourself to stop every once and again and look and see how much. It's kind of the old proverb of you know your priorities by your pocketbook and your, which I know that's a word that some of our young men listening might be like, what is a pocketbook?
By what you spend your cash at.
Yes, exactly. By your bank account. Yeah, exactly. Your bank account, your credit card statement, your cash app, Venmo, whatever. You know the priorities of your life by your bank account and by your calendar.
Yeah.
What you spend your money and your time on. And so you have to be intentional. Take a weekly look. It's your role mm-hmm. as a husband. Take a weekly look and say, you know what? I haven't been intentional with taking my wife out to eat or spending some time with just she and I because it's been a busy season or what have you, or the kids have had this going on or whatnot. Or as a father, I think it matters to both be together all as a family, but also you need some individual validation for each kid. Depending on how many kids you have and just for that child. For instance, I have only one. And so I'm not nearly as experienced as you are having 47 or whatever it is you guys are up to now. I was very intentional though with my daughter growing up, especially even now. Last night, she probably won't hear this, but even if she did, I'd say the same thing. Last night I was ready for bed. We'd been pretty active the last couple of weeks with some things, in our life. And, I was super tired, ready to go to bed, but she has become a fanatic Golden State Warrior fan. And so the game was on late last night. It was on after 10 o'clock, playoff game.
Yeah.
And so there I was staying up till after a team I don't even care about. But I care a lot about her.
Right.
I knew it was important to her. And she's like, Daddy, you can go. She's almost 19 now. Daddy, you can go to bed. You don't have to keep staying up. But I know, I knew beforehand, but I also knew when I was going to bed and she thanked me for staying up, watching the game with her. You know, just that's a minor thing, it seems like, but it matters. And just be intentional. Just realize. And so my point was, when she was growing up, especially, but even now, I make it a point to look at and evaluate. Have I spent time with just her? Because she knows she's important to our family, but she also needs to know she's important to just me, not just the family as a unit, but her specifically. Fathers, your role as the one that brings validation to your children is so vitally important. And planning that out, just taking a pause, taking 30 minutes of your day on lunch one day a week, and saying, okay, let me look over the next few weeks and let's strategize a little bit. I can take my daughter out there. I can take the family out here. We can go do something together, whatever. And so it doesn't have to be complicated. You're going to know when things are crazy in life and you need to be extra intentional. And you're going to know when things are out of balance. You're going to feel it. Yeah. There's going to be a kind of an internal conflict and tension, if you will. Tension's a good thing. It tells us that something needs to be worked on. And so embrace that tension and go do something about it by planning it with your pocketbook and your calendar.
That's good. I know one of the things that we've done recently is I have, you're talking about being good with a calendar. And that's one of the things that I realized, you know, Candace and I were talking about life and just like everything that's going on and, you know, work and all this stuff, and realizing I was not good with a calendar. I wasn't good at planning things. We're looking at life. And, you know, it's just like everything starts piling on. Everything becomes a priority. Every fire needs your attention. Every person needs your attention. And it was like, especially after we had that conversation with you and your wife, that podcast episode, it kind of like pushed me to really thinking about that. And so one of the things that we've done is our goal is, doesn't always necessarily get hit, but our goal is every Sunday evening to sit down, talk about what's going on that week, set a date night that week.
Good.
And really like look at the week and go, okay, so this is what's going on. I know one of the things that's helped me is I've got a friend now that's my accountability partner. So every Saturday, we'll text each other and be like, hey, so like he's keeping me on track. We're keeping on track for both of us, making sure we're taking our wives out on a date that week, awesome. Reading a book a month, making sure we're exercising, and like one other thing. But we'll text each other, and like the past couple of weeks have been absolutely abysmal. So like we'll text each other and be like 0, 0, 0, 0. Yeah. I'm like, we're gonna do better on this. And I was talking to my wife the other day, and she's like, I'm loving this accountability thing. She's like, because it's getting me date nights.
Yeah.
And
that's awesome.
You know, it was kind of those things. It's helped me be more mindful because I know I've got somebody else I got to talk to about it.
That's a great layer to it. In terms of the planning stage, having someone you're in communication with that's going to hold your feet to the fire and just remind you, hey, keep it intentional. And another thing that women, it's a vital need. We're different men and women. And one of the needs of, we all have a lot of common needs, but one of the vital needs is conversation. They need an opportunity weekly with you as your as their husband. And by the way, if you have a female daughter, this also applies. Not that if you have a son, it doesn't, but especially as a need of a female, they need your attention. It doesn't have to be hours even on end, but what you said, that whole deal, that's another part of kind of the planning phase, is we try to have a planned every week. Our Mondays are our kind of sacred day, that it's a family night. And so that's part of the calendar as well. Part of the calendar or the clock, if you will, is I try to carve out 20, 30 minutes a day where I can sit down and just check in and just listen and just give undivided. I think it was Dr. John Gottman, I may have mentioned this on the last podcast, talked about the intentionality of 20 minutes a day for a spouse to have that time to just not even talk about the family, just to whatever, you know, whatever's on
just
their
talk.
Mind. Yeah. And that's, I think having the built-in things like the Sunday night or the Monday helps. And you're right. They're good. Our families understand, and this, I'm sure, regardless of what your vocation is, but especially ministers, our families, they know that there are seasons. Easter, for instance, it's a busy season for a church.
Yeah.
When you got a wedding on Saturday night, you weren't aware of the previous Saturday. These are busy moments. Families get it. You just have to be good. You just have to be good at not allowing them to become 1 week turning into 6 weeks. And when you miss a week, make up for it. When I was involved with youth ministry, and I was youth president for the state of Virginia, you know, that involved probably like 3 months of my time, not all at once, but over the course of a year, just a really involved position if you're doing it right. And, there were moments that I had to tell, we literally sit down and say, hey, just let's know where we are in the calendar. The next 3 months are going to be crazy from June to August. If you're, and I know this is kind of a niche for some people that are involved in the United Pentecostal Church. So, but no matter who you are, where your background you're from, you'll understand. Yeah. For us, that time is camp season. And so it just was crazy. And so my point for saying all that is when you go into a season where you know you're busy, regardless of your vocation, whatever it is, talk about it and then make up for it. So, hey, the next 2 months are going to be crazy, but don't worry. As soon as that is up, we got a 2 week vacation. We're leaving on the next week or whatever it may be.
Yeah.
So calendar, clock, whatever, the planning phase, and then communication comes into play and all that. with respect to priorities and planning.
Yeah, definitely. That's another time I got to shout you guys out in that episode, just because you all were talking about that and how you've been intentional about making sure you've got family planned events after busy seasons.
Yes.
And making sure you sit down before the year starts and says, hey, this is going to be a busy season. Let's plan some things out.
Absolutely.
And Candace and I did that.
And if you're not, you mentioned you're not inclined. You struggled in that area.
Yeah.
You get extra points. Like if your spouse knows you, that's not like, that's a natural part of me. That's how my brain is geared. But for anyone listening and you're like, oh man, I'm not good with a calendar. Oh yeah. That's really kind of not my strength. Okay. Then you have a huge brownie point moment here to say, I am going to sit down, because it's not that hard. You just sit down, you look at the calendar, figure it out, talk it out.
Yep.
And it gets you validation points of your wife feels validated, your kids feel validated extra, because they're like, oh yeah, that's definitely not his forte. I'm telling you, that's a huge deal.
That is awesome. And the thing is too, and I've heard it said about Sundays, I forgot who it was. They were talking to pastors and they're like, Sunday comes every week, you know, and we know things are going to happen throughout the year. And if it catches us off guard, it's not because we didn't know about it. There are those things that do catch us off guard, things like the unplanned wedding on a Saturday when you got two other events going on. That's an unplanned event. But, most of the stuff that we have going on, we know it's going to happen. And, for me, I know it was just the lack of planning, the lack of actually taking time to look at a calendar, sit down with my wife. And like this year, we've got two events that we're doing for our family coming out of it, right? So we've got me and her going away for our 10th year anniversary.
Awesome.
And then we're going away as a whole family. So grandparents and everybody, we're going to Pigeon Forge in September. So
I love it.
But that wouldn't have happened, if we hadn't sat down, taking the advice that you all gave, if we hadn't sat down before the year started and gone, hey, what do we want to do? And that's really awesome. Put, some priority on that. So I appreciate that advice.
Absolutely. And let me just, I don't want to spend more time on it, but
no, you're good.
I think it bleeds into this and address very quickly, because husbands and wives may be listening. You're like, well, yeah, it sounds good to take those kind of trips, but we can't afford it. What we're talking about is the key. If you plan it ahead of time, if you really get on the front end of it, you can afford it. You can, because you can begin to plan way out. We take really, great trips, but many of it, the reasons why is because we plan it way out in advance. And so that planning and priority part of component of things will also make you realize you can do things you thought you couldn't do. You're right.
Yeah.
If you're trying it in 3 months from now, you probably couldn't afford it, especially the larger family. But if you do it a year, year and a half, you make payments, whatever. So anyway, just wanted to mention that kind of covers a whole nother part of relationships, the financial component of it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Next one I wanted to ask about was, still on this idea of, fatherhood and being married. And if you're sitting down with a young man, and he's about to get married, and the reason why this question came to my mind is recently I've sat down with guys who are married, but are younger. When we start kind of discussing some things, you see that there's some questions that they never really asked themselves or were never really asked. Mm-hmm. What are some questions that you're asking a young man to examine about himself before he actually either proposes, if he comes to you and says, hey, pastor, this young lady I'm really interested in, I want to make her my wife. What are some questions you're going to ask him to kind of get him thinking about life in general and himself?
It's good. And the clarification of himself is key, because when I first was thinking the question, that there were the obvious questions that you ask about, the other person. If you're in ministry, is she ministry minded? Are you going to be equally yoked? Or have you met her family? There are some questions that are important. Have you talked about parenting? Do you agree on your methodologies and philosophies of parenting? Have you talked about finances? Because all of those are big questions that man should be asked. Have you had a fight yet? How was the response? But the biggest question that I ask, it absolutely has to do with the individual. And that is, my question is usually along the lines of, are you the husband that she's worthy of having? Mm-hmm. Are you the man that she deserves?
Wow.
And it's important because it makes that individual stop and first of all, evaluate the value of what he's getting. We right. so undervalue the gift of marriage and
yeah.
the gift of the amazing person that we're getting ready to be connected to in holy covenant and vow that God right. has created and ordained for us to have. But we neglect sometimes to think of it from the other perspective. Is she getting the gem that you're getting, so to speak?
Right.
And the question isn't meant to be, I mean, it's meant to get in your face a little bit. Are you the husband she's worth having? Are you the man she deserves?
Yeah.
It's meant to challenge, though, in the positive of if you're not, if you know there's some things that she outpaces you on. And look, we're equal in value, but there are different, you know, we play different roles, husband
right.
and wives.
Yeah.
And so there are things that my wife is more effective in, and there's things I'm more effective in. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking really more right. the deeper issues, especially character, ministry. Maturity and all those things. If you're not, then you have something you can do about it. You can begin to apply yourself. And so the question is, are you the husband she's worthy of having? Are you the man that she deserves? And then the next question is if not, what are you doing about that?
Right.
Because it's meant to prompt the attention to the need and the accountability to start doing something about it. Are you yeah. working on that? And if you're working on that, well, then that's part of the joy of marriage is you're going to grow together as you work on one another, as you work on yourselves and one another together.
Right.
And it, now if there's a major flaw, if there's something significant as a pastor, it's a different kind of role. There's been a couple times where I've had, actually, there's only been one. Let me go back that I can think of only one where I've had to say, look, you need to put the brakes on. And even though you've got the date planned and the place planned and whatever, it ain't time because you yes. got to get this right. This isn't one of those that, well, I think I can figure it out. And then you get into it and you get covenant vowed together and
yeah.
you didn't get it figured out.
Yeah.
So the big question is, are you the man that she deserves? And here's my philosophy on, and I'll say one more thing on that. If you aren't working on you, and this really is regardless of, you may be that guy in the sense that, you're mature, you got everything together. And by the way, the question is for every person because all of us have something we can work on. It applies.
Right. Yeah.
It applies to all of us. And that's why I ask it. But even though you might have it all together, and there's no major issues of needing to work on. The point is to bring this discussion about that I try to have with young men, especially men about to get married. Don't ever stop working on you, because if you're not working on you now, you won't work on you then no. when it's us instead of me. And so if that man is not willing to say, hey, there's some things I got to work on and I'm going to be the one that does it. Because what happens is a lot of times people get married and it's the female trying to push the man to do something. And it just creates a cycle of frustration and disrespect. And then it really takes some effort to get that reversed. That cycle reverse.
Yeah.
So the point is to make them realize that if you're not working on you now, continuing to grow now, you're going to have a real hard time doing that when it's no longer me, it's us. It's kind of like a young person. Hey, if you don't start a habit of talking to God and reading the Bible, it's going to be a whole lot harder when you're an older person.
Yeah. So true. I know too, with that, part of, I think the psyche that plays into that is once you're married, why would I need to improve because they married what they have?
Sure.
Right. You know, that idea of, well, I don't need to improve because I'm good. Like they married me the way that I was. They knew who I was. They knew my flaws. So why improve? Not realizing, you know, the more that you improve, the better that relationship's going to be. So the better you work on you and the more that you can, you know, allow God to work in you as well, you know,
Right.
The better off you're going to be long term. And with that too, I know for me, that's been one of those things that like you see the bad habit and it's funny sometimes, and then it's not. Candace and I've talked about this, or like there's some questions, you know, post marriage that we wish people had asked, not because our relationship is bad, not because, you know, anything of that nature, but it was just some things that were like, we were looking for someone to ask certain questions, and people were like, oh, y'all two are a great couple. You're both in church or this. And, you know, kind of gave the stamp of approval. And we look back and I'm like, you know what? There's some things we probably could have done better. There's some things we could have worked on a little bit more. And it would have set us up long-term for a better success, sexual marriage. You know what I mean? Like it would have set us up for a better trajectory in marriage. And so, that's a great question to be able to actually, if you're going to be honest, that's a great question to be asked, because it pushes you to learn and do some really deep introspection on yourself and not lie to yourself and be like, I'm good. That's something I can pass on.
And that's the point, is it's a leading question to really get in, and you can start extrapolating, kind of peel the layers of the onion back and see that usually it exposes, you know, sometimes multiple areas where a person needs to grow and mature. Yeah. And if you're the pastor, this is more particularly for pastors or mentors, if you know that person and they're not being honest, or they're blindsided, they just have a blind spot.
Yeah.
It can also help you lead into saying, well, have you considered this area of your life? What does that do in terms of creating conflict in your marriage when you get married? Will this be something that is something she sees that she may not see now? It affords you the ability to start laying back the layers of the onion. And because, like I said, usually all of us somewhere, whether it's an organizational part of our life we are bad at, okay, improve there. If it's a spiritual component, if it's a relational, if it's communication, all of those things, it begins to help extrapolate the different parts of, and it is for the purpose of, okay, it's time to really think about me for a minute. I need to improve. I need to grow. And all of us do.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. So what, in your opinion, is probably one of the most hardest things about being a husband and being a father, just in general? What's one of like the hardest things, and then how have you found a way to navigate around it, or to navigate through it?
This is one of those questions that you could go so many different directions, because husbandry and fatherhood, it's such a being a husband and a father, it's such a vast subject. Where do you begin? And I will, let me soapbox for a minute and tell you, I don't even like, and this isn't meant toward you personally, I mean, generally speaking, because I hear it all the time, I don't even like the language of the question, in the sense that this issue of what's the hardest thing. I get what the point of people saying and bringing the word hard in respect to marriage. I get why they do, and I'll unfold it in a minute. But language creates culture. Stop using these words regarding marriage, because that begins to put into and seep into the culture, the mindset of how people approach marriage and how they approach themselves changing and being what they need to be. Marriage is God's idea. We make it hard. So I would say things are only as hard as we make it. And really, I would say even more so that it's, if we're honest, it isn't it's not just because it's a marriage that things are hard. It's being selfless is hard. It's more to do with the sin nature. If we're being honest, it all boils back down to putting to death the sin nature. That's what's making anything hard, especially relationships in a God-ordained covenant relationship like marriage. You know, being selfless is hard. Putting someone else first, that's hard. Then when you get into the actual elements of marriage, then I know there are certainly things we need to learn as men. So that's just kind of rant over, but I had to I chuckled when I saw the question, because I will often say that if I hear someone talking about marriage is so hard. Look, I get it. I know that there are components and challenging, there are things that are challenging, but let's change the language a little bit. Let's not give into kind of that kind of language. Let me illustrate even further a little bit with just kind of how that whole illustration of language creates culture. If you take one thread, a thin thread, you can break it pretty easily. But if you put thousands of those threads together, you can't break it. It's not easily broken.
Right.
And a thought is like a tiny thread, and our thoughts are subject to our language. So a subtle small thought, it's easy to deal with. So let's just deal with it right now. Let's stop using negative language and start right. using the right positive approach. Because when thoughts compile and then the negativity compiled, neurologists have suggested that the human brain has approximately 70,000 thoughts a day. That just wow. blows my brain. Wow. Speaking of the brain. And you imagine taking that thread of thought, 70,000 more of them wrapped around, looks more yeah. like a pretty strong chain rather than
yeah.
a thread. Every thought, when they come, you have to deal with them. That's a whole nother message for a whole nother day, so to speak. But it illustrates that one kind of perspective regarding relationships, if it's a negative perspective, we can compile it quickly. And then all of a sudden marriage is really hard and man, yeah. you gotta continuously work. So I chuckled that I'm like, I'm going to see if Jonathan really loves me, I'm going to attack the language of that question a little bit.
But I'm okay with that.
Rant over. The thing that I do find, I think, that is challenging for us, because we're different, men and women, that's the thing that I think men need to be attentive to have a successful marriage and make it less difficult, which is understanding, period. Just having a heart for understanding, perspective of where a person's coming from, what they've experienced, what they've gone through, and how they respond to things. But especially yeah. our differences in the area of communication preferences is a challenge that I think men sometimes fail in getting right. And it's because we have, regardless of what now society tries to say, we have biological differences that are important to kind of understand.
Right.
And a lot of men, for that matter, a lot of women don't either. The whole conflict is usually centered around communication. Well, that's because our brains function completely differently. You probably have heard the analogy, and I can't remember now, I think it was Bill and Pam Farrell. They talked about men are like waffles. Have you heard that comparison? Men are like waffles.
I think.
Women are like spaghetti. What their point is that men's brains process life differently. We process yeah. life in boxes, like a waffle, collection of boxes. They're separate from each other, convenient holding places, if you will. And that's yeah. typically how men process life, with this thinking divided up into boxes that have room for one issue and one issue only. And the typical man lives in one box at a time. When he's working, right. he's working.
Yeah.
When he's tinkering, he's tinkering. That's why,
yeah.
you know, he looks like he's lost in a trance and can ignore everything else around him.
Yeah.
The social scientists call that compartmentalizing. Well, men are really good at it. And so as a result, what happens is men are good, but problem solvers by nature. They enter a box, they size up the problem, they formulate a solution, and then they try to get there as quickly and efficiently as possible. And they're not as interested in the journey as much as they're interested in the destination. Well, yeah. women are not like that. You know, that's why men spend most of his time in boxes he can succeed in. And so he's seeking out the boxes that work, and he's ignoring the boxes that confuse him or make him feel like a failure. And that's why he vacates a lot of times. Discussions wow. and being present, because it's something he doesn't have a handle on.
Yeah.
And so men, they also take a success approach to communication. If they believe that it can reach a desirable outcome, well, they're highly motivated to converse. But on the other hand, if the conversation seems pointless or hard to yeah. understand, he's losing motivation to talk and to clam up. And so that success drive, if you will, is why men find it so easy to develop hobbies that consume their time away from their spouse and their family. If he finds something he's good at, it makes him feel good. And so that's yeah. where he puts himself and his time and his attention. You know, that's why women can't understand this. But men, literally, we have the nothing box. Our brain goes there. We think differently. Yeah. Now, women, on the other hand, they're like spaghetti. It's not a perfect, it's like any relationship philosophy. It's not perfect, but it definitely has some like aha moments in it.
Right.
That
yeah.
Women process life more like a plate of spaghetti. And by the way, this doesn't mean men are right and women are wrong, or women are right and men are wrong. It means we're different. And that's the thing that is challenging, is we fail to understand that. And so when we get into conversations, we think from a man's brain that woman is hearing with a man's brain, and they're not. And we think women think the opposite, because the plate of spaghetti analogy is it's like lots of individual noodles. They're all in one plate. They're all touching one another. And if you attempt to follow one noodle around the plate, you're going to intersect with a lot of other noodles, and you might even switch to another noodle seamlessly without knowing it. And that's typically how a woman processes life. That's why they're incredible multitaskers, and men are terrible at it. Men are compartmentalized. We're on one thing at a time, very focused. Women, they can bounce quickly and easily. Every thought and every issue is connected to every other thought and issue in some way. And so life is more of a process for women than for men. And so they enjoy that journey probably as much as the destination, whereas men just are destination oriented. So, as I mentioned, the multitasking thing, all the thoughts, the emotions, the convictions, they're all connected for the female. She's able to process more information, track more activities. So as a result, most women are in pursuit of connecting life together. And it's kind of the quintessential. I don't remember who the comedian was, but I remember hearing the bit where he's talking about having went and golfed with his buddy, and he's out golfing and he comes back, spent 4 hours with the guy, you know, and the woman's like, "How's Steve doing?" And he's like, I guess he's doing good. You know, she's like, "Well, what about the marriage situation they were dealing with?" And the guy's like, "What marriage situation? I don't know what you're talking about." Well, what about the kids? What's going on with them? I don't know. And the female is like, "What did you guys talk about?" And the guy is like, "Why did we have the need to even talk about? We were out enjoying he's like, "I know he got a new putter. You know, I know the answer to that question." It's just the proverbial, you know, we have a completely different way of looking at life and priorities that are focused. And by the way, that's a good thing. And it's why we need one another. It's why, which leads into some other discussion we'll have. And so I won't go there now, but I'm just telling you, it's why we need one another. God created us in such a tremendously different way. And so the last thing I'll say on that is that, you know, because we have different styles of communication, our brains work differently. You know, men think and speak in headlines almost, whereas women think and speak between the lines. It's between the lines and it's the headlines. Then what we have to do is we have to learn to take turns. And whoever is beginning the conversation should be the one that sets the pace for it. Because if a female begins the conversation, she's there to talk about the journey that got them to this conversation. And men need to stop trying to fix the thing that he hears, and his ears perk up and he's like, "Oh, I can fix that." Just listen and just enjoy. Let her enjoy talking to you. If men are the ones that initiate, then, and I know the females aren't, you know, this is geared toward men and husbands and fathers, but the same applies though. Let him deal with that one thing. Don't try and jump and connect every other issue of life to it. Let him deal with and talk to you about that one thing. It really just comes down to taking turns, and it really boils down to, what is difficult is we don't take the time to learn the differences and understand what and how that other person works.
Yeah. I think that's probably one of the biggest things, is being able to have that conversation and know the other person is listening. That's one of the things Candace and I, we've worked on and are working on, is just being able to sit there and have a conversation. And she's the fixer in our marriage. So she's the one who's like, "This is what you need to do to get this fixed." And I'm the person who's she'll still go through like the journey, but she's like, if I'm telling her something, she's like, "Okay, so let's get this fixed real quick. We can get this done like this." And I'm like, "Well, I kind of want you to like hear where my heart's at. Like, I want you kind of hear where I'm at with this, not just fix it." And so we've had those conversations where, I'm talking and she's like, "Okay, we can fix it." And like, we've learned to kind of like balance each other out where, you know, and it's, I mean, we're about to celebrate 10 years. So it's taken 10 years to kind of figure out this, the beginning of this journey. Right. And so for those who are listening, don't feel like you have to solve this thing overnight, because you won't. But definitely work on it, because it has improved how we talk,
exactly,
and how we communicate with each other. So
it is. And that's really the impetus of the whole point of this, is that why it's challenging is that we're different. Okay.
Yeah.
Then that leads to, it doesn't mean that someone else is wrong and you're right, or
right,
that you're wrong and they're right. It means that we're different. So the challenge then is how we have to put in the work and the effort to learn each other and understand each other, and then put in the discipline,
yeah,
of listening and not being the one that's always gearing, steering, and dominating the conversations and the results of those conversations.
Right. Yeah. Wow. That's good. And also, I want to say thank you for the correction on language. I had a conversation with someone actually not so long ago, an elder, and I sent him a question. And, you know, when you have those moments where they're like, hey, so the wording on this isn't good, it forces you kind of go, okay, so how do we rephrase this? In the job world, we do it all the time, right? So for my job, we don't talk about problems. We talk about opportunities.
There you go.
What is the opportunity we have, you know? Yeah. And, but it can be very easy to slip into that mindset of, well, this is hard.
Exactly.
Like you said, if you're going to focus on it, like, it's hard if you make it hard. It's not hard. You know, if you decide that you want to focus on it, like, instance,
and if you go ahead.
I've got Lego set, right, that I have not built. My wife bought me a Ferrari Lego set, and it's got like 1200 pieces in it. And some people look at that and be like, that's hard, right? 1200 pieces, right?
Right.
But to me, because I enjoy that, when I finally do put it together, and I've had it for 5 years, so that tells you how busy I've been. But when I finally do put this thing together, like, it's not, there may be parts that are challenging, but it's not going to be hard.
It doesn't feel hard. Exactly.
And it's because I'm focused on it.
Hammer and hitting the nail on the head. Absolutely. If this is, it goes back to the priority thing. This is the wife God's given. She's the,
yeah,
the, you are to love her like Christ loves the church. This is the most prized and joyous thing. And that, and by the way, creates the other greatest prized and joyous things, your children. This doesn't need to be looked at as hard. It needs to be looked at as,
yeah,
man, this is wonderful. What can I do to make it better? What can I, yeah, do to understand? And if both of us are looking at that in the same way, our husband and wife, then it comes together. And of course you're going to have disagreements. And of course you're going to have to go back to the drawing board at times and be like, you know what?
Yeah.
I forgot that we're different. And I was thinking I was right, et cetera. But it really is. And I appreciate you being willing to let me kind of get on the soapbox for a minute, but it, yeah, it really is important. We got to have the right concept. And I think you would actually ask in that kind of along the same lines, you'd ask something about the hardest thing about husband. Was that where you also ask about father? One of the challenges of being a father.
Yes, sir. Yeah.
Well, if you want me to answer that, I will. If you want to,
yeah,
move
definitely
on.
I definitely
think for me as a pastor, my observation over the years it's afforded me kind of a front row seat to families and the dynamics of families. And I feel like one of the biggest challenges I see for fathers is not loving God, not being faithful. Not that those aren't challenges for some, and they're vitally important areas and issues.
Yeah.
But I find that fathers are struggling with the will to be firm in correction while also still being loving and spending time. And so what I've noticed is that fathers are either so soft that they hardly ever correct, or they're too firm and they never express affection.
Wow.
And so I think fathers really need to be intentional. Your wife is not the one that needs to always be the disciplinary. In fact,
right.
In fact, and I know that this is not universal in the sense that every marriage is going to be a little bit different. Every male and female is a little bit different, but you have a godly role to be the one that, yeah, leads that family. Stop making your wife be the bad guy. You got to stop making your wife be the bad guy. Accept, yeah, the responsibility of, you know what? And you don't have to do it
authoritatively with domineerance and I'm the boss, bless God, you're gonna do it like it's my way or the highway. No, you just have to set the standard of the home, be willing to be firm, loving, gentle, and firm. And then you need to balance it with being the one that is at every ball game that you can be at and loving and saying the words, I love you, and hugging their neck, and I want to spend time with you, and hey, let's plan next Saturday to go play catch or whatever it is. Because if you have to walk the balance, because if you're the one that's always disciplining and you're harsh and you're then it's usually going to result in rejection and rebellion to what you're wanting. And so it's a bad cycle. If you're the one that's never correcting, then you're failing that child, because that's not how the real world works. There are consequences to bad action, and it's going to catch up with you. And so I think the challenge of fatherhood is to be firm, to be solid, and to correct when you need to correct, while also making sure you're balancing that with being the one that is affectionate and loving and the biggest fan, if you will, of that child, the one that is. You need to be the most supreme validator in your home. Validate them with time, attention, words.
Yeah.
And I think that you'll satisfy probably the biggest challenge. And it results in the third part of that question, which was the fulfillment. It is the most fulfilling thing as a man, for me, husband and father. I love opportunities and ministry, and I've traveled the world, and all those things they're wonderful. But at the end of the day, the conferences I've preached, and that's my lane. Other people could be the court they practiced in, the doc, the surgery they perform, whatever.
Right.
At the end of the day, it ain't going to be one message that I preach that really makes the fulfill. Yes, it's an honor. Don't get me wrong. But the biggest thing that is fulfilling to me is to know that I've created a well-balanced, godly, and loving atmosphere where memories have been made and time and life have been spent together that has equipped my wife and daughter for health, happiness, relationships, spiritual growth. And it all boils down to one of the things a father struggle with is just being there. That brings that's the greatest joy, when you can sit back after a long day and you can look across the room and your wife and your daughter are happy.
Yeah.
Bro, that's fulfillment. That's where we get to get our minds geared toward. That's what I want to see, because all too often it's the opposite. The fulfillment has come during the day, and man, you nailed the job and the task at hand, and you get home and everyone, and it's in turmoil and it's in disarray. And I know that there are roles to play, but dad, husband, it begins with you. Usually ends with you. If you'll get that to be your priority, that when you get home, not before you get home, you're happy and you're fulfilled, and then you feel like frustration and failure at home. Get that right, and man, it's the platform everything else grows off of.
Wow, that's so good. I know there are times, working, so ministry and having, being bivocational, working the job that I work, there's times where I'm like, super excited about my day, right? So like we met the deadline or we got something done, and I come home, and there are days where like I come home and everybody's excited and everybody's happy and it feels really good. And there's times where I come home and there's everybody's running around. It looks like the bomb went off at home, and like my wife is standing looking at me like, I'm glad you're happy, but I kind of need you to jump in right now and take care of some stuff. And learning how to like not put away your happiness, right? But learning how to jump in at that moment and be like, okay, so let me help out here. Helps her in that way, so that you can get to that point of looking around and everybody's, calm. Your wife is like, thank you, right?
Right.
Because I've made the mistake of coming in and talking about my day when there's like three kids, four kids at the table crying because they're hungry. And I'm kind of helping, but not moving fast. I'm trying to tell her about my day, but she's not really concerned about my day, because at the time she's got four kids she's got to feed.
Absolutely.
Being able to navigate that and see that happiness, there's nothing like it. I had talked to a dad one time, and was at work, and checking him out. He was bringing some stuff up, and He had a little girl with him, and she was saying something. And you can kind of tell, like, he was irritated that she was talking to him. And it struck me because, you know, we kind of have those moments sometimes where maybe we aren't the best dad, right? We're not the best at what we're supposed to be doing.
Sure.
But he made a comment along the lines of, like, not liking being a father. And one was, like, he said in front of her, and it was just like, and I was a new dad at that point. And in my heart, I'm like, how could you, like, how could you not like your child? How could you not love your child? And realizing that there are some guys in this world who, you know, whether it be because they never saw what a good dad was like, or maybe they consider their children mistakes or whatever it is, they don't see that. And it was one of those moments that, like, challenged me. It was like, I'm never going to, like, God help me, I'm never going to be in a place where my kids are a burden. And I give off that vibe that you're a mistake or I don't want to be around you.
Absolutely.
And it cut really bad that day just to see that interaction. And so that's been one of those things that's kind of, like, driven me to be a good father. And to be a good husband is when I see when people are not, I'm like, I want you to see, like, there is a good way to be, there's a poor way to be. And I can't agree with you when you're like, oh, I don't like being a dad, or I don't like being married, or, like, I've got to make sure you see that there's that balance on the other side of things as well.
At some point, they got a lot of the stuff we've already talked about. They didn't spend the time getting right. Like, even the discipline part, you know, parent that's just at their wit's end because their child is can't be controlled, so to speak, whatever.
Right.
A lot of times that's because the father was not there, or they failed in being firm and giving the correction to set a standard of conduct. And so that what you're seeing is the frustration and the spillover of a whole lot of things that just weren't done or didn't give priority and planning to. Absolutely. Yeah, that's sad. It's tragic. Words matter, bro. Yeah. And the father and husband role, but especially dad to the kids. Yeah. Just be careful with your words, because it's one of those deals where a lot of times, and this is bleeding into something I didn't mean for it to, but
you're good.
I'm talking about punishment and discipline. I've heard parents talk about, well, I have a hard time spanking my child because, I don't want to hurt them. But the same person will raise their voice and yell.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that I've raised my voice. I've even yelled. I'm not perfect. I'm saying the idea that doesn't still strike pain. And I think if what I've studied, it's anywhere accurate. The raised voice, that kind of vitriol harshness, strikes a whole lot deeper than the temporary moment. And I don't mean anything radical or abusive. I think that goes without saying, but an appropriately timed and moment of physical discipline, that harshness, especially over any period of time, carries a whole lot more wound than the other. Our point for all that is really be careful. Parents, dads, just think about it. Just really be conscious of it. My words matter, and they can help and heal, or they can hurt and wound. And it's really, there's not a whole lot of in between.
Yeah. I know, going back to what you were talking about earlier about being a father and making sure, as far as the correction balance, I saw something not too long ago. As a podcast I listened to, and he was talking about, he's a former Navy SEAL, and he was talking about when he was training other SEALs. He said you'd see a Navy SEAL who was super aggressive and overly aggressive in training. He would talk to him and say, hey, you're a little bit aggressive, you know, kind of dial it back a little bit. He's like, and the human tendency is not just to dial it back, but it's to go to the opposite direction.
Yeah,
totally. Right. So you go from being overly aggressive to not aggressive. And then he's like, hey, so you need to dial it up a little bit. And then they go back to being, you know, super aggressive. And he said, sometimes you can get frustrated. He's like, it's very hard for humanity to really find that balance and find that middle of having, you know, for, in his context, aggression, and also being able to step back and not be aggressive because the moment doesn't call for it, you know?
Right.
And I think as a husband, that's where one, you know, discussing, I've heard this before, I think it was from Focus on the Family. But they were talking about how you should predetermine disciplinary action and how you should say, you know, well, you know, if our child lies to us, what are we going to do? If our child steals something, what are we going to do? If we tell our child to do something and they don't do it, what is the course of action? What are the steps we're going to take? And what does that build to? And they were talking about how that allows you to then, you know, have a game plan. And so when it happens, you don't have to kind of like come up with something on the spur of the moment and be like, oh, you're grounded for 4 months. You know, when they maybe made a mistake, but you're able to like look at the situation and go, okay, so this is what our protocol as a family is. We've talked about it. You did this. You know what the next step is because we've talked about it. So this is the next step we're going to go with. And if you don't, you know, obey in the situation, you know, the next step is this, and being able to talk in a reasonable way with the child and giving them like, you know, this is how we escalate this. It doesn't just immediately jump from zero to a thousand, allowing you to be able to maintain your emotions because you're, and I think it's funny sometimes to think about it as an adult. But you know, you feel like you're almost out of control of the situation because the kid's done something. And so you feel like you've got to like wrap your arms around it really quick and fix it really quick, realizing that, hey, no, you're the adult, you know, step back. And I'm totally guilty of this. So I'm not saying it from a position of I've never made this mistake, but realizing, hey, okay, so as the adult, how am I trying to guide my child? And that's been one of the things that's challenged me is at work, you know, we're taught to coach people up. Right. So if I have a team member who makes an error on an inventory, right, my job is not to immediately write them up and fire them. Right. If I have somebody who's late, my job is not to immediately write them up and fire them. My job is to sit down with them, go, hey, saw you were late today. What's going on? Talk through why they were late. Right. Yep. And at certain ages, your child's not going to be able to tell you why they did what they did. But the concept still applies, right, to be able to have that conversation. Or just give direction. Hey, this is what I need from you. I need you to do this, or this is the consequence. But still remaining in control of your emotions, your voice, and the situation, so the child doesn't feel like they're controlling the situation. You know,
absolutely. That is some of the best I've ever heard put into words. What you just said is so key, and because the bottom line is. Not every offense needs a voice raised, or not every offense needs a mean approach or a harsh approach. And I should say very seldom does it ever. Not, there are times you're going to get the parent voice on and it has to be. There's got to be some directness. But and also with, you know, physical punishment. Every offense shouldn't be, you know, you're going to get a whooping or get a paddle or whatever. And I think what you just delineated is so key, which is having a plan keeps you away from doing something real dumb and woundful in the moment of anger. You know, when Paul talks to men about praying everywhere, lifting up holy hands without wrath and doubting, he's dealing with several issues that men wrestle with. But one of them specifically is the area of anger. Yeah. And whether it's with words or with your hand, when you discipline in that moment of anger, you're violating what you just addressed, which is having a proper, purposeful approach, which will result way better in what you need and what that child needs in terms of end result than just resorting to whatever, you know, anger response. And so I think that's really important back to the whole planning part of things, prioritizing your family and planning. That goes back to the question that I mentioned kind of offhand about, you know, have you talked about children and how you're going to raise your children? Right. Men and women have different approaches. Both are important to consider. So husbands and wives need to talk about it, and they need to sit down and listen and give validation to both views and then come to
a biblical and right focused decision on how do we discipline our children. Yeah. And I think that the more you're equipped as a dad, then you're willing to go back to what I talked about, which was one of the challenges. And that is sometimes men vacate. They don't want to be the disciplinarian. They don't want to be the bad guy.
Yeah.
Why? Because they feel like, oh, I'm going to go overboard. You know, I've heard men say that. I don't want to ever, you know, be the one to correct my child because I'm going to go overboard. But that's a pathetic excuse. That tells me more about you than you realize it tells me.
Yeah.
I'm not trying to be mean or ugly. It's just, if that's you, you got to fix that because it is your role and responsibility as a father to be a corrector and to guide and give direction. But if you're more equipped to do so with what everything you had just outlined and that approach, then you're not as intimidated. And that's just be honest. That's what it is. You're intimidated to do it. You're not as intimidated to take on that role and responsibility because you have a plan and you don't have to rely on your emotion. That's probably the biggest challenge is keeping your emotion and your anger and frustration in check.
In check. Yeah.
Yeah. So, man, that's great.
So true. That's true.
Good stuff.
One of the last things I wanted to ask, and this came from a couple personal experiences, was around communication with our spouses. And there's times where we can fail to communicate because we think in the moment it'll make us look weak, whether that be a mistake that we've made or something that's happened that we thought was going to go a different direction. Just it's something that makes us, in our mind, it's going to make us look weak. In those moments, the two questions I have is, one, can you communicate too much? So in a moment where maybe you failed to make a deadline on something that, you know, was surrounding the family or something that you feel like is something that you're dealing with internally, right, can you communicate too much to your spouse? And then two, how do you effectively communicate to your spouse in those moments of difficulty, either personally or something that surrounds the family?
Yeah, it's a good question. The quick answer or the short answer to the first question is, can we communicate too much information? Yes, I think you can. If it's about looking weak, I think that's silly. I think that's
right.
A pride issue, and we need to get over that. Hopefully you're, you know, there's a trust element in your relationship, and women need to work on this, that sometimes they can kind of mock their husband if they show emotion or whatever. And so it's a deeper subject than just this one question, but yes, right. I think you can communicate too much, and I'll get into kind of the hows in a minute or the why I say that, but I don't think that looking weak, and the pride element there is a good reason not to. No, I think that's something we just got to get over as men. It doesn't help our relationship. But on the yes part of it, yes, we can. As to what would be a reason to consider, you know, withholding, not withholding or hiding something, but just, I think more appropriately, it's you should consider what and how you're sharing it. And so to move to the second question, what's the best practice to communication with respect to sharing things when you're struggling, you're going through and you're, you know, really going to be vulnerable and open up. I think number one, motives matter. So let me talk about motives. And then I think timing matters. So I'll talk about timing, and I won't take a lot of time on all these. I'm just very quickly kind of summarizing. And then tone matters. First of all, men are naturally inclined to be more confrontational when they have an issue or a disappointment or whatever it may be. So we need to consider our tone when we're sharing with our wives those difficult discussions, whether it's about the relationship, about us personally, you know, whatever we're going through. Ministry is overwhelming. Life is overwhelming, et cetera. Be careful with your tone. The timing matters. And I'll just give you kind of a small scale
that relates in principle to whatever the scale may be, large or small. But recently my wife and I were working on a project that involved other people. Someone dropped the ball. They communicated that later at night. My wife was already lying in bed. She was already just kind of, it was a busy day. It was a lot of work. We were just physically exhausted. She's lying in bed because of that other person kind of not fulfilling something. It was going to result in she and I having a longer day the next day. But the last thing I wanted to do was tell my wife, who had kind of decompressed from the day she had just had.
Right.
The last thing I wanted to do was tell her in that moment. I wanted her to not worry about it, get some sleep. And so, of course, the next day, shared it. She literally thanked me. Thank you for not telling me that last night. timing matters. Okay. So I think you can share too much. Yes. Because you just picked a bad time to do it. But ultimately motives are the thing that I would just spend a moment or two on to say, I don't think our wives need the quote unquote protection near as much as we like to think. Our wives are strong. And they have perspectives that are blind spots for us. It goes back to they're looking at things from a total, they have the plate of spaghetti, everything's touching. There's emotion involved. There's feelings that they consider a lot more than men do. And you know, so many times we talk about that from the negative, like, oh, women emote. That's a positive thing. That's something we are weak on. We need their strength in. We need to realize that our wives can handle some things when we're going through difficult times in life. And we also need to realize, okay, we need their strength and their counsel. As much as they need ours, we need their strength and their counsel. My wife, because she sees things from a different perspective, has saved my bacon so many times, from pastoring to parenting, you know, whatever. She offers me a perspective that a lot of times will soften, going back to that confrontational approach, it'll soften and say, you know what? I needed a moment to consider this a little more. And then the other thing that I would say in all this, the motive element, our wives are strong. They have perspective we don't have. They need the companionship. It's one of the five basic needs of the females. They need companionship. They need to feel like they're the helpmeet God called them to be. They need the companionship of working on problems with us. Yeah. And so my point for all this, we need to ensure that our motive is right rather than an ego-driven thing of, I'm just going to be this stoic, bear the weight of the world on my own shoulders. And then when I have it all figured out, I'll reveal my heroism to my family or my wife. So she'll think I'm just some stud. Here, I got some revelation for you.
Yeah.
Here's the problem with that. Number one, during that process of time you're trying to figure it out, you're usually a pain to be around. You're miserable.
Yeah.
And you make everyone else around you miserable. Your wife and kids are wondering what in the world's going on. Why is he being a jerk?
Yeah.
Et cetera, and et cetera. Okay. Number two, you miss the blind spot counsel that I referred to earlier. You don't gain from her strength and wisdom. And number three, I'm just going to tell you, fellas, your wife is not impressed by this. She's hurt that you couldn't trust her as the helpmeet God designed for you to work together and bear things together. And so it's a multi-layered question, but yes, I do think you can share too much in the sense that your timing's off, your motives are wrong. And one more thing that I'll address in a second, but I think that we need to realize that kind of the default should be most often that they are stronger than we give them credit for. Sometimes they have perspectives we really need. And it's a whole lot better to talk it out, and you feel better. It's a cathartic thing almost to be able to talk it out and them know why you're frustrated, why you're going through it, why you're struggling or whatever, rather than having to guess why is dad and my husband just a crazy man right now or miserable to be around. Now, with that respect to the cathartic thing and why, one more reason why I think we have to be careful, our motives got to be right. We can share too much. If you're going to say or do something just to get it off your chest, to feel better, to have that cathartic effect, but then you know it's going to leave your wife in a heap of emotion and misery, well, then yes, I think you can share too much. I'll give you, for instance, as pastor, and now this is just me. So, you know, ultimately, if you're under a pastor, you need to definitely talk with your pastor.
Right.
But
this is just me, but I have seen men that have, for instance, I'll give you a very male men folk, a men specific thing. I've seen men that struggle with pornography when they were married years before, like they've already gotten victory over this. They're doing so good 5 years yeah. ago, 6 years ago, whatever. And all of a sudden they feel the need to bare their soul to their wife and tell them about this failure, this mistake.
Yeah.
And it serves your pastor's there for that. Your God is there for that. It's not an ongoing issue that you need to work on your relationship. Your relationship is perfect. All these things. Right. I've literally seen men cause their wives go into a cycle of emotion and trauma and hurt because they just wanted to get something off their chest and feel better. I think then times like that, you really need to consider the right counsel first before. Now, if there's something that has to come up because it's a relational issue and it's ongoing or what have you, and there's yeah. multi-layers to that. But I think men have to be careful that it's not just to make themselves feel better and they put their wives in an emotional wrecking place. So that's timing that's matters. Good. So anyways, that's my perspective on that question.
Yeah. Wow, that's good. I know quite recently, the reason why I said the question had some personal attachment to me was because we had a conversation, Candace and I had a conversation not too long ago, and talking through some things, and just like I was telling her, and one of the things I told her was like, I don't want you to see me as a failure. And she took that moment to be awesome. Like to be absolutely awesome and just be like to convey to me how she saw me and to remind me, as you were saying, that she was there to help. And that, you know, we were able to have those discussions. She's able to give me advice. She's able to kind of help navigate it. And I have found over and over and over and over the past 10 years that when I have a conversation with my wife about a difficulty or about a situation going on, that she is able to offer that perspective of, you know, you could just do this. And my brain hasn't even, like you were saying, my brain hasn't even considered that avenue, hasn't 100%. Even looked down that road. And she's like, you know, you could just do this. That fixer in her kicks in, right? And she's 100%. Like, you could just do this. And I'm like, oh, that makes so much more sense now. And it goes from me just feeling like I've got a weight on my shoulders that I've got to work through and figure out to now it's like, okay, this is actually something that we can process. We can work through. We can navigate the situation. For the times that I have held on to information that she needed to know or should have known, you know, to be able to help navigate that, I have been that bear of a person to be around because I go quiet. Right.
Yeah.
I am not a person who's if I'm dealing with something, I go silent. And she's like, so what's wrong? I don't know. You know, and it shuts down and my kids want to play. And I'm like, daddy can't play right now. Cause I'm trying to process this thing in my brain where if I was to say, hey, later tonight, when the kids go to bed, we need to talk to kind of figure something out. She'd be like, all right, let's do that. And at that point, I at least feel the release that we're going to talk about it. And it allows me to be able to navigate my family relationship a little bit better, you know?
It does. And it explains to them that you're processing something that you're not trying to hide it. You're not trying to, you know, even be stoic and heroic. You're processing it for the effect of, or for the advantage of being able to talk about it and deal with it and fix it. And I think I would say one thing, you know, that if you have that, hey, later tonight and you talked about something, give a little bleed of what it is so that your wife or this is generally speaking, the person is not in panic. Like, oh my God, what I do? Could this be? Yeah, exactly. but what you said is absolutely, it's so good. Just communication. It's a wonderful thing. Just communicate. Yeah. It doesn't have to be in depth. Hey, this is kind of what I'm struggling with. And I just got to kind of process it for a minute. And I want to talk to you about it. Then you know what? Then your wife doesn't have to be eventually what probably she feels like she is nagging, and women have to be careful with that as well. You need to be real aware. There's a fine line between being a helpmeet and being someone that's nagging, and you know. But a lot of it comes back to just a simple communication. And I'll say two more things on this. One of the five, there's a book out by Dr. Willard Harley, His Needs, Her Needs, older book, way back, His Needs, Her Needs. And he, from years and thousands of counseling sessions as a counselor, family counselor, he kind of listed out the five basic needs of men, five basic needs of women. And one of the five basic needs of a woman is honesty and openness. And that's where this comes into play. She needs for you to be open about this. If you are wrestling with something that is something to companionship and work out together, and you refuse to tell her, and then you come back after a time period of silence and frustration, whatever else, it's not gonna be something she is going to be in herself helped by or increased by, for the most part. Be honest and open. And the one thing I would say, maybe women are listening to this, is when your husband is vulnerable and shares with you, like what you just said in your example, you said that you told your wife, I don't want you to think of me as a failure. You need to be real, real, real conscious and careful that you're not telling your girlfriend about this stuff.
Yeah.
You have to preserve the sanctity. And it doesn't happen all the time, but I have seen it happen where they say the right things in those moments, help their husband, but then down the road, they might hear that when they had a girl's night out and they went out for lunch or dinner or whatever, she shared, my husband was real, real vulnerable the other night. That's not what you need to conversate about. Don't do that, because the surest way to get him to clam up and it never happened again is for him to hear about any other female or any other person for that matter, knowing about that private moment of vulnerability. But back to the point, when you share those kind of things with your wife in that sincerity, it's amazing the strength and support that they offer you when they see you being real vulnerable. It's so worth getting past your ego and saying, babe, I'm struggling. And I don't mean you have to be wimpy or whiny, but you can be emotional and honest, and she's going to respect you way more than being stoic and heroic.
Yeah. Well, also, I'm talking about too, those times where you're trying to be stoic and heroic, it very rarely ends up with you being heroic.
Absolutely.
It normally ends up with everybody being frustrated at you for not saying something because it doesn't turn out the way it's supposed to turn out and the way you were hoping for it to turn out.
It absolutely does. And it reminds me of a story I heard years ago. I read David Roberts is a CEO of some transportation leader. I can't remember now, but he said when he was 10 years old, his dad allowed him to have a birthday party. He was hitting the double digits, and it was a simple party, cake, ice cream, games, few friends, whatever. And during the course of the party, some of the friends began to play with a beach ball, and they wouldn't let him play. And so this 10-year-old boy took the ball, locked it in his bathroom. And he said it allowed him to remain the center of attention. But he said he had great parents. His dad never let moments of character development pass without taking advantage of it.
Yeah.
And he said he pulled him aside and he told him that he was acting selfishly. And he said, I know it's your birthday, but it's not always about you. And especially in this case, even though it's your birthday, you're the host. Your job is to serve your guests.
Yeah.
And so he gave the ball to his friends and he sent him to his room and he said, I'm going to let you be alone for a while because I want you to know that selfish people usually end up alone. And parents, husband, father, this applies in this way. You do this long enough to where you want that stoic, heroic element to your life where you figure things out alone. Yeah. What you just said is absolutely right. It usually winds up where you're miserable to be around. People are frustrated with you and they eventually let you be exactly that. They leave. They let you be alone. So don't try and work everything out alone or you're going to eventually live life alone.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know, just to kind of cap on this, but I know there's been times where even if I wasn't asking my wife for advice, but just letting her know, hey, this is what's going on, I'm talking to pastor or I'm talking to this person about what to do next, has allowed her to go, okay, so I'm not necessarily in the conversation, like she's not necessarily in that conversation with me and pastor or me and my friend or whatever, but she knows this is the situation and he's working on it, but he's working on it with someone else. Like he's right. got some input outside, and that has helped her feel a little bit more confident, because she looks at me and she goes, oh, okay. So you're talking to pastor. Oh, okay. You're talking to, you know, your dad, or you're talking to your mom. Good. And it allows her to feel a little bit more confident that I'm not trying to, the term lone ranger it, right? I'm not trying to be the hero, but I'm actually seeking some help on that situation when maybe her plate's full, right? She doesn't necessarily need to know everything going on, but she needs to know what's going on, and she doesn't need me to ask her for advice at that moment. She just needs a, hey, here's an update on what's happening to allow her to feel confident.
Good. So good. Yeah, that goes back to just a little bit of communication.
Yeah,
it goes so long in terms of helping you. Just keep the ties of communication open is a good thing. And like you said, it doesn't mean that. Well, and it goes back to the timing issue. You knew, like you said, there are times you know she's not ready. She's got enough on her plate, so I'm not going to ask her to really put the thought and the time and the attention to solving it. But she does need to be informed that if it's something that matters to you, it's important to you, or it's going to affect your, you know, your attitude and all these things, she needs to know what's going on.
Right.
Yeah. So good.
That's good. Well, as we're wrapping up, was there anything that we did not discuss or talk about that was on your heart that you wanted to share as far as, you know, the topic today of being a husband and a father?
I would just say kind of in the closing moments of this thing, to every man, depending on, or regardless of, rather, the roles that you're playing, and especially whether you're married, unmarried, father, the thing that applies to all of us in every single role, but let me qualify and say, but especially if you're married and or a father, it's really, really vital that we continue to work on our character, because if we'll work on our character, the rest of these issues and relationships will often play themselves out. And so I would say to every man, and I usually say this if I'm speaking in any capacity to men, whether it's a conference, a call, a mentoring session, there are three tests of character. Number one, the mirror test. And the question you should ask yourself often is, am I being true to myself? Listen, you can't lie to the mirror unless it's one of those trick mirrors.
Yeah.
You cannot lie to the mirror. My grandfather loves me, but sometimes he tells me, son, you need to lose some weight. You know, you're fat. You need to lose some weight. And I can talk about how, you know, big boned I am all I want. The fact of the matter is when I look in the mirror confirms that grandpa's right. And so you need to have the practice of evaluating, looking in the mirror and letting God and his word shine the light on those areas of weakness, and let character scrutinize every one of your excuses. And the point for all of this is that the reason why we work on character is that character doesn't guarantee we'll never make mistakes, but it will refuse to let us live in those mistakes. Yeah. And as husbands and fathers, there's too much at stake. We need to constantly be evaluating ourselves in the mirror test. And so there's the test of the mirror is something that you need to be familiar with to work on your character. Number two is the mentor test. You need to have someone in your life, whether it's your pastor or someone, an elder, someone in addition to, and by the way, if it's your pastor, he still is your pastor. It's two different roles. He can serve both, but he's still got to be pastor at times. But regardless of who the mentor is, you need to pass the mentor test, being accountable. You talked about accountability earlier. That's kind of this layer here. You need to have someone that you're accountable to, that you are being honest with, and you can pass the test of the mentor be able to know that what you're saying about your life is in fact what they see your life and see from your life. And so, and then thirdly, working on your character, there's the mirror test, the mentor test, and then the masses test. Are you really who you are and what you're portraying to everybody that's following you, beginning with your wife and your child? Because they'll see through every veneer and they'll see through every fake and phony. Make sure that you are what you're supposed to be to them, which is the leader, the spiritual guide, the nurturer, the greatest source of their affection, the greatest source of their love, the greatest source of their confidence. And if you'll work on the character, if you'll focus on your character in those regards, then I promise you some of these other things will come together. It reminds me, and I'll close with this. There was a little boy that the man was very close to his son. He loved him very much. And every day after work, the man would come home. They would play together, throw the ball around, play catch, etc. One night while the man was working, he loved spending extra time with his son, but this is one of those busy times we had talked about. You know, we have them. The seasons are challenging at times, and they're busy. He realized they had extra work to do that evening and would be able to play with his son as long as he would like. And so it would be a little bit delayed before he could play with him. So he wanted to give his son something to keep him busy and maybe miss the void of that. And so he looked around his office, and he had a magazine, large map of the world was on the cover of the magazine. And so he got the idea. He removed the map, kind of tore the page off, and he tore it into some small pieces. And the boy was young enough that it would keep him occupied, and put all the pieces in his coat, went home, gave him some tape, and he got home. He told his son, I'm busy tonight, and if you'll just give me an hour or two, then we'll play. Whatever. So he gave him the scotch tape, and he gave him the pieces of the map, put him at a table, because his thought was it would really occupy his time. He explained that it was a map of the world, and by the time he could put it together, they'd be his extra work would be finished, and they could play. Less than an hour later, the boy comes to the man and he says, "Daddy, I'm done. It's all finished." And dad, of course, was doubtful, and he said, "It's impossible, you know." So he said, "Well, let me go see." He walks over, he sees it. Sure enough, there's a picture of the world. It's put together, the pieces in its place. And he was amazed. He said, "Man, son, how did you do that?" And the boy said, "It was actually very simple. On the back of the page was a picture of a man. And when I put the man together, the whole world fell into place."
Wow.
If you'll focus on making sure the man is put together, that's you. If you work on the character, you're going to be a great father. You're going to be a great husband. You're going to be a great leader. But you've got to make sure you keep the man together.
That's so good. And with that, we will end. Thank you for joining us again. And appreciate the wisdom that you shared. And I really do pray it's been a blessing. But thank you for being on today.
Well, thank you again for the invitation. It's an honor to be asked, and sure hope that someone's blessed by it today.
Yes, sir. Well, take care. Please let the family know we said hello.
Will do. Same to you.
Yes, sir.
Bye-bye.
God bless.